With an eye toward Earth Day on April 22nd, hundreds of people from across the state will convene at Monona Terrace next Wednesday to discuss what can and should be done by public officials, corporate leaders, farmers, small business owners, you, me, community organizers, and everybody else about climate change in Wisconsin. We're going to be talking about that today with first with Pete Nowak, with me in the studio, professor of environmental studies in the Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. With us by phone today, Jay Gullidge is a senior scientist at the Pew Center for Global Climate Change and manager of its programs on science and impacts. Really pleased to have them both with us today. You may have some questions, I hope you do, about climate change. What's its effect on Wisconsin, for example? And join in, 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. Pete Nowak, welcome back. We haven't talked about this before, but it's nice to have you back on the program.
Well, thanks, Larry. I think we've got a lot of exciting things going on, and I'm looking forward to the chance to promote a little bit in terms of both the Earth Day Conference, some of the outstanding speakers like Dr. Gullidge that will be there. But more importantly, I think there's a number of the citizens groups as well as citizens, some of our elected leaders. They're all going to get together and begin to, I guess you could say, take up the challenge that Gaylord Nelson left for us. Gaylord Nelson recognized that these complex environmental issues, as well as other issues, could be addressed through both leadership and recognizing the will of the people.
Yeah. I tell you what, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday on the program with a physician and another person who's in the exercise field about a conference that they're having relating to health and global change. And Jay Gullidge, I know that your Pew Center on Global Climate Change, according to your organization, this situation poses an extraordinary challenge and it demands immediate action. Is science giving us a clear message about the risks posed by climate change, do you think?
Well, I'm of two minds on that. First of all, thank you for having me on today, and I'm looking forward to this conference next week very much. And on the risks of climate change, the science, if you know how to look at it, is telling us some very clear things, but I'm not certain that it's being communicated very effectively to the public and to the policymakers about the extent of the risks that we're actually facing in the not very distant future because of climate change.
Yeah, and what are some of those?
Well, for instance, the science on sea level rise is quite underdeveloped, and there's the message that global sea level rise could very well be much higher than the projections that are commonly reported in the press is not very well appreciated. And this has to do with, within the scientific community, it's understood very well that this is the case and why this is the case, but it's not communicated well to the public. And that's one of the examples of a major global scale impact that is going to, possibly be much larger than than the public understands that it might be. But on a regional scale, this is also the case as well, and this is probably simply because it takes a while for the scientific information to penetrate at sort of the regional, local level. You hear a lot more about global scale phenomena than you do in the media, than you do about things in your own location. And so, for instance, in the Midwest, we've recently released a report at the Pew Center on the regional impacts of climate change, and one of our case studies in that report is on heat waves in the Midwest. And the Midwest is one of the more susceptible or vulnerable regions to heat waves because they're not all that common there. Of course, the South has them every year.
Right.
But in the Midwest, when you have a severe heat wave, there are often a large number of premature deaths, such as in Chicago in 2005, 1995. The fact is that in the Midwest in general, you're going to see about 70% more heat wave days later this century than you have right now. And that's a big change. Not only there'll be more days of heat waves, but they're going to be hotter. So these are things that this is just a level of information that takes a while to penetrate.
Jay Gulledge, our guest today, one of our guests, senior scientist at the Pew Center for Global Climate Change, and Pete Nowak, professor of environmental studies at the Nelson Institute at the UW-Madison. The Nelson Institute is hosting the second annual Earth Day Conference on Climate Change in Wisconsin next Wednesday, April 16th, at Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center in Madison. And there's been overwhelming demand for this conference, has there not, Pete?
Yes, we started off a little slow, but as the word got out among these various groups around the state and many of our elected leaders, the registration has soared. We're at the point now where we've had to cut off registration and started a waiting list. Many of our sessions are going to be standing room only, just because of both the importance of this topic, the timeliness of this topic, and the issues that are going on here in the state.
And you might tell us, though, Jay is going to be speaking, but there will be other, obviously, presenters as well. And just give us a little flavor of what's going to be happening.
Oh, we're working from the top right to the bottom on this one, Larry.
We start with Jay at the top.
Jay's actually going to be preceded by our governor. Our governor, several years ago, put together a climate task force charged with examining what the state of Wisconsin and the citizens of Wisconsin can do to reduce what's often referred to as mitigation, reduce the release of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. As well as the governor, they're the two co-chairs of that task force, are going to be involved with the conference. They aren't ready to release the full report yet, but preliminary recommendations are going to be released at the conference. In addition to that, and then that will be followed, as you noted, by Jay giving us our keynote looking at the concept of uncertainty and risk, we're going to have a number of other scientists as well as citizen leaders presenting on a number of different issues. You mentioned human health. We're going to have a session on how climate change can influence human health. A number of businesses here in Wisconsin, another example, recognize that not only are there challenges and risk associated with climate change, there's also opportunity. So there's going to be sessions on the opportunities associated with climate change. Some of our leading businesses who are also supporting and participating in this conference have recognized that and done quite well. Transportation, in terms of our natural resources, a number of different areas of natural resources, there's a number of sessions that are going to address these. Not so much with the answer, and I think that's a critical point that's really going to be reflected time and again at this Earth Day conference, is we're not there to disseminate the answers. We're there to really help form better questions in terms of how Wisconsin needs to address these type issues. And that's the role that the Nelson Institute plays in this. How do we bring out those better questions by listening to and working with our citizens?
We have callers on, like Gary in Wauwatosa wants to chime in here, so let's go there. Gary, hi.
Hi. For about 20 years, I've been involved with air pollution from two foundries, just because of the last two homes that we lived in. And it was kind of, the first one was, beyond our control. The second one, we didn't know the extent of the problem. So I've had experience with Wisconsin DNR, the EPA. And it just does not seem that there isn't anything to back up the laws that we already have. There's no staff, there's no money to enforce the laws. They're overworked, and people are so frightened from going door to door in my neighborhood here in Wauwatosa. They don't want to hear it.
No.
It's just so frightening. They don't want to hear about the dangers of the pollution we already have. I don't know how we're going to get people in a short time to rally behind a change that has to be so vast.
You know, that's an interesting question, and I want to turn to Jay Gulledge for a response on that. Jay, how do you respond to that?
Well, that is a very striking remark, and it is one of the things that we struggle with every day in Washington when we go to members' offices, which we do frequently on both sides of the aisle. We hear this. We hear the same message. Our constituents are much more concerned about other issues, or they have fear that the solutions may be the medicine might be worse than the disease, these kinds of things. But I think the problem is that do tend as a nation, when we come into circumstances that are challenging to us, we tend to kind of wait for a crisis before we respond. And my reaction to that is, we just have to keep pushing, because it's important to respond before the crisis really strikes. And unfortunately, it may not be too far into the future, and especially with a system where there's a lot of inertia. We have already implemented change that hasn't been realized yet. And it's imperative to act, and I think we just have to continue to inform people of the facts and help them to understand that the solutions we understand the solutions. We've had done similar things in the past. Although the caller feels that there aren't enough solutions to the pollution problems, in fact, since the passage of the Clean Air Act in 1990, we've had tremendous improvements in air quality. We've had tremendous decreases in sulfur emissions. And it's a cap-and-trade system that helped limit our sulfur emissions, and it's the same kind of system that can work for carbon emissions. The truth is that without these solutions, things will get much worse.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And tell you what, we'll take up some more conversation about that. And I also wanted to tell you a little bit about this week's Newsweek, which I found a really good addition, good issue, and something that people might want to read about, too. And I'll get my two guests' comments on that as well here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look now at climate change here in Wisconsin and across the globe, for that matter. Jay Gulledge is senior scientist at the Pew Center for Global Climate Change and manager of its program on sciences and impacts. One of our guests, he's with us by phone. The other with me in the studio, Pete Nowak, professor of environmental studies in the Nelson Institute at the UW-Madison. The Nelson Institute is hosting the second annual Earth Day Conference on Climate Change in Wisconsin next Wednesday, April 16th. Really pleased to have them both here. If you have a question or a comment, want to chime in, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Appreciate having you join in with your comments. And we had a caller before our news break who, Pete, I'll go to you, who had a comment about difficulties getting around, not getting around, but with the laws or with the fact that so many of our agencies are short-staffed. And what's your response? Jay had a response. What's your response as well?
Well, I think an important point here is that that individual has a very legitimate, serious concern. And I think the genius of Gaylord Nelson was he recognized that if you look across the state of Wisconsin, there's a number of citizens out there with similar concerns, and we really have a choice. We can look to Washington, D.C. for the solutions to those local problems, or we can work with our neighbors and the various groups that are available to try and solve those problems. And that's where the Nelson Institute, that's how the Earth Day conference was organized. For example, we have a brilliant young assistant professor dealing with air pollution impacts associated with climate change, because climate change is going to have a number of impacts on air pollution here in the state. And she's going to address that at one of the concurrent sessions, what we can expect. So if there's been inattention, the lack of resources, and a lot of agency runaround in the past, what the Climate Change Conference is clearly going to say is that type of inaction, that type of failure to invest, is not the type of leadership that's going to be needed to address these emerging issues. And hopefully that leadership is going to emerge out of this conference.
One of the things I would encourage people to take a look at this week's Newsweek. It arrived in my home. Jay, did you have a chance to see it by any chance?
I've only seen the cover on newsstands. Is this the one with the three of us with the candidates? On the cover?
It's kind of a white cover, and I can't, I honestly...
Oh, okay.
It arrived in my home. We have subscribed to it and arrived last night, but there's several articles in there about dealing with climate change and global warming, and one of the stories talked about the awareness by the American public of this and really the desire to get something done, crossing political lines, both Democrats and Republican citizens recognizing that something needs to be done. It's a very high percentage. It had jumped 11 points in just the past several months. And so there's, I think, a willingness on the part of many people in this country to, you know, let's roll up our sleeves and get something done. Are you seeing that, Jay?
Absolutely. I mean, the polls have been consistent. I have to say I haven't seen the Newsweek edition, but the polls in general have been following a very consistent trend for several years now, especially since Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. Beyond that, the media has done a much better job over the last couple of years of disseminating the results of scientific studies showing that we're actually observing impacts of global warming around the world. The IPCC report that came out in 2007 had a very large impact with the science community now saying that there's better than a 90% chance that the warming that's occurred in the past half century has been caused by man-made greenhouse gases emitted to the atmosphere by the Nobel Prize being awarded to the IPCC and Senator Al Gore over the issue of climate change. And the message that's coming through is that this is a very, very real problem and that it's not a problem off in the future. It's actually happening now. The science is documenting that fact. What's happened is the debate has now moved into the condition of what are we going to do about it, the question of what are we going to do about it, and there's a lot to be worked out there. We know that we're going to have to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions. This is extremely clear, and we now have a bipartisan bill in Congress that would do that, the Lieberman-Warner bill for cap and trade of greenhouse gas emissions. And the other part of this equation that's very, very important is adapting to climate change, because we're going to have the next two or three decades that are going to be changing because of greenhouse gases we've already emitted. And so this conference in Wisconsin next week, for instance, is a very key thing. What Professor Nowak said was really important, that this is going to help Wisconsin define the questions that it needs to get answered to address the problems of climate change and also to take advantage of economic opportunities that are arising because of climate change.
Yeah, there was quite a piece in the Newsweek about the opportunities for entrepreneurs right now and talked about a lot of the sort of the new companies that have sprung up and what they're doing. And there's some amazing things going on out there right now and still plenty more to come, I'm sure. Louise in Hillsborough has a question for us or comment. Louise, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on those who would say that this problem, you know, there's other problems and they don't want to look at this. Pardon me. A friend of mine who was a devoted environmentalist, Sister Paula Gonzalez, you know, I approached once and I said, hey, sister, you know, you're supposed to be really involved with people. And she just looked at me and smiled, and she said, Louise, if we don't solve this problem, the rest won't matter.
Yeah. And she's probably right, Pete Nowak.
Well, very definitely. And as Dr. Gulledge just stated, that the changes are in the system. You can use whatever metaphor you want. John Foley, one of our scientists on campus, often goes back to the year 1940, that we're just starting to see the impacts of the gases that were emitted in the 1940s, the early 1940s. And so everything between then and now is in that pipeline. And whether you think of it as a large ocean liner that suddenly tries to stop, or a locomotive going down the tracks that you suddenly put the brakes on, the momentum in this very complex physical chemical system is going to continue forward for a number of years. And that's pulling that stop is the mitigation. The adaptation is where we're going from, and where our call, Luis from Hillsborough, is how are we going to adapt to that? How are we going to make these changes in response to the changes that occur? Larry, I know one of your more popular set of guests on the show here are the weather guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, they often distinguish between weather and climate. And it's often hard to think because I'll hear people say, well, look at the winter we just had. You can't talk about global warming now. And what your weather guys would tell you, there's a big difference by looking at one year or one particular event, any short time frame, versus climate, which is long term. You got to look across decades in that sense. And when Professor Gulledge begins to lay out the statistics on what's happened across the decades, I think your friend, the sister, may be right. The trends don't look good. So we're going to have to make some significant choices, and hopefully we can begin that process at this Earth Day conference.
Thanks, Louise, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Charlie in Hollandale a chance to join us. Again, thanks, Louise. Charlie, hello to you.
Yes, hello. Hasn't the Earth have been changing constantly ever since it's been formed?
Well, go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, I can speak to that. I mean, the answer is yes and no. I mean, it depends on the time scale that you're looking at. We've actually had a very stable climate for the past 10,000 years there, if you look at global averages. Now, people talk about the Little Ice Age, the medieval warm period, and these were periods of moderate change in certain parts of the globe that were not global all at the same time, and that, in fact, were within a change of 1 degree Celsius or less than 2 degrees Fahrenheit, whereas you have to go back actually 125,000 years to find a time when the Earth was more than 2 degrees warmer than it is now. And So the fact is that for the past 10,000 years, which scientists call the Holocene, which is the current warm interglacial period, it's been very stable, and there has not been a global deflection of the global average temperature like we're seeing today during that past 10,000 years.
Let me just add to that, because I think that's an important point, and why we invited people like Dr. Gulledge to this conference. And let me try and simplify that with a metaphor. If you think of a large table, say with some sort of border around the edge, and on that table you have thousands of these various sized steel balls, and then you vibrate that table so they're bouncing all over. That's climate for the last 4 to 6 billion years on Earth. There's been change. By definition, the climate has changed across that 4 to 6 billion years. But now recently we've noticed that the vibrating pattern seems to be different. It's very complex. Which way it's going is uncertain. There may be some risk involved, but we do know changes are occurring in that complex pattern of vibrations. That's what climate change is all about, that change in pattern, not whether a pattern is there or not.
Interesting. Thanks, Charlie, for calling. I want to give Bruce a chance to come in from Eau Claire. Bruce, hello to you.
Hi. Question about carbon sequestration technology. You know, carbon dioxide being a major greenhouse gas, and the idea of pumping carbon dioxide into the ground. I know the oil company's been doing it to extract oil, and now they're talking about sealing it down there. And it just occurs to me, you know, how well can you seal a gas like carbon dioxide underground? Is that a long-term strategy, or are those going to leak out? And are there any other technologies available to sequester carbon? Obviously, there's biomass and things like that, but actually take carbon out of the air and turn it into a solid.
Jay?
Yeah, so there are two different things I think that you might have two different things we can talk about there. One is taking CO2 coming out of a power plant, and before it escapes to the atmosphere, separate it from the effluent and pump it underground as a gas. And actually, when you pump it under the ground, you do so under very high pressure, and it turns it into a liquid. The idea there then is to store it under a cap rock, and probably in a deep saline aquifer. We're talking about kilometers under the surface. That's below the groundwater that we use for drinking. The in principle, this is sound, and I'm not a geologist that works on this, but I talk to them, and they believe it's sound, and the one reason is because it doesn't stay a gas; it actually dissolves, it's a liquid, and it mixes in and dissolves into the saline solution down there. And then over time, it becomes chemically bound to minerals, and eventually, we're talking thousands of years, turns into rock. So, yes, in concept, that is a long-term solution, a permanent solution, assuming, of course, that we're not going to continue to emit CO2 forever. We'll need to do this for decades, and then by the end of the century, not be emitting carbon anymore. And so it's a permanent solution as we move into a zero emissions economy. The other idea of removing CO2 directly from the atmosphere is also possible. It's actually much more expensive. It's a very energetically expensive thing to do, but there is research on it, and there are a number of chemical processes that'll absorb CO2 and turn it into rock, essentially. And then you can potentially dispose of it as fill or what have you.
Hmm, interesting. Thanks, Bruce, for calling. Sarah in Bristol, it's your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. You'll have to bear with me. I have an awful cold, but this is so important I had to call in. I've been an environmentalist for over 20 years. One of my first speeches in seventh grade was on the rainforest destruction, so I've been following it ever since then, and it's driving me crazy. I hear a lot of people in Wisconsin, and I don't know how many people around me anyway, that talk about how, well, it's not so bad, and there's a lot of people playing Chicken Little, and there's, you know, it's not as bad as anything where it's not even happening, and it drives me absolutely batty. And I'm wondering, what can I do other than, you know, going out and trying to explain it? And, you know, I live the lifestyle, but what else can I do to talk? What other opportunities are there to try to get this knowledge out so people can understand this is a very serious issue? Because it's not, you know, as I understand it, the Earth will actually probably live through it. We will not, and a lot of the species will not. So it's not only it's our problem, and it, you know, the Earth will live, but most of us on it will not. So how can we get that across to people?
Well, I think there's two ways on that, Sarah. And Bristol would be an ideal place, because one of the things we have here in Wisconsin is we have a very healthy environmental NGO, non-governmental organization community. There's a number of environmental groups that are very active in this area. At the Earth Day Conference, I know we have three or four of the major ones here in the state that have already taken a position, that have a very ambitious agenda in this area. And so my first suggestion would be to get active in one of these environmental groups. And if you want to contact me at the Nelson Institute, I'll be happy to give you the particulars on who or where you could contact them. The second thing to do is, you have a number of elected leaders at the very local level, everything from the school board on up to our state and, of course, our federal representatives. They need to hear about your concerns. Not necessarily that you're asking them for the solution, but you're asking them to participate in the process by which a solution will be found. So I think there's two strategies you can take. Become active in an environmental group and fulfill the political ambitions as laid out by Governor Nelson.
Jay, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would add that in her personal interactions with her friends and colleagues and neighbors who take this view that frustrates her, just to be patient with them and then help them understand. You know, you can arm yourself with information. You can go to www.pewclimate.org. We have a lot of information targeted at people like you to help you understand and arm you with the information that you need to communicate to your friends and colleagues in a patient way. And you can tell them, you can explain to them that they think that 3 degrees warming on Earth, which is what we would see with about a doubling of CO2 from pre-industrial, it's about 550 ppm, doesn't sound like much, but it hasn't been that much. It hasn't been that warm for 3.5 million years, and there were 100,000 humans on Earth at the time, and they just walked away when the climate wasn't suitable. And we've never had on Earth with civilization on it that was more than about a well, as warm as it is today, to be honest. So it's a very different Earth, and the ecosystems will completely change. The coast will move. It's a very, very different world that we're setting ourselves up for if we don't limit our emissions of greenhouse gases. And it's just going to take some patience and continued discussion to help them understand what a transformation we're talking about with a few degrees of warming.
I hate to go back to this Newsweek article again, but I'm going to do it anyway because there was a kind of a nice political piece in there as well about our presidential candidates. And all three of the presidential candidates, or the remaining ones from the two major parties, they outlined what each of them have to say about global warming. And frankly, all three have that as a pretty high on their agendas. And it was kind of good to see that that has made it to the presidential level, Jay.
Yes, it has, for sure. And any of the three who get elected, we're going to have strong leadership on climate change in the White House. It's going to completely change the political landscape. Now, there are differences among the three of them, and, of course,
right,
particularly between Senator McCain and the other two. But they're all very strong leaders on this. Senator McCain is phenomenal because he was the first one in Congress to actually write a bill on climate change. And being a Republican, that was a very bold thing to do. And, you know, we at the Pew Center are nonpartisan, and we've worked with people on both sides of the aisle, and we admire Mr. McCain's leadership on this, and it just goes to show that this simply is not a partisan issue, and he understands that.
Yeah. Stella in Sturgeon Bay will give you a chance. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I was just calling in. We just tuned into your program and was calling in to let you know of an activity that's going on. We're in Door County, and we're with a group called Sustain Door, which is working on sustainability for Door County. And we are sponsoring, along with Crossroads at Big Creek, a sustainability fair on Sunday, April 20th, from noon to 5 p.m. And people can get more information on it at our website, which is sustaindoor.org.
Sustaindoor.org. And Pete? That's the kind of thing I think you like to hear about.
There it is. That's what it's all about. And, you know, in 2 years, 2010, we're going to be celebrating the 40th anniversary of Earth Day. And for those of us that are long enough in the tooth to remember 40 years ago, Larry, we'll remember that coming out of that first Earth Day, there was a number of, at that time, considered radical environmental legislation. And those of us with even longer memories will remember that it was a Republican president that signed much of that environmental legislation that emerged from the activities of a Democratic senator from Wisconsin. Climate change has to be similar. It has to be bipartisan. And most importantly, it has to really build on what Stella and her group represents. It has to build from the bottom up. We can't look to the top down type of solution.
Thank you again, Stella, for calling. Appreciate your call. And here we are, out of time. Jay Gulledge, I want to thank you so much for being with us, and you will be in Madison.
Yes, it's been a tremendous pleasure, and I very much look forward to the meeting in Madison next week.
Yeah, and that'll be on the 16th of April.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Jay. And Pete Nowak, it's going to be it sounds like an interesting and fun conference, and good luck to you in that conference.
We'll do the best we can to control the enthusiasm as well as the ideas of the citizens of Wisconsin. So
thank you so much.
You're welcome, Larry.
Jay Gulledge is a senior scientist at the Pew Center for Global Climate Change and manager of its program on science and impacts. Pete Nowak, professor of environmental studies in the Nelson Institute at the UW-Madison. That conference next Wednesday, April 16th at the Monona Terrace in Madison. And it's already overwhelming demand, registrations of people have been putting on wait lists. So tell you what, there's a lot of interest, and we appreciate having both of our guests on to talk with us about it. Just to take a look ahead, tomorrow on the program, we're going to change gears a bit with you and talk home renovation and repair issues. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg, our guests. Stay with us. Lots in store.